And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
A shot. They score. Tarasenko. Tarasenko in front. Shoots. He scores. Tarasenko.
I'm so happy for Loyola, for the city of Chicago, because we are almost a Cinderella.
2-1-0, and how about this? Loyola Chicago is off to the Final Four.
3 seconds, 2 seconds, that's it! The Michigan Wolverines will move on to the Final Four.
Bridges, he's wide open for the three. It rims the basket, no good, but DiVincenzo slams it home.
Came really close to going in, it didn't.
Kind of spun around, it looked like it had a chance to fall in. And fortunately, when it came off, you know, it was at zero, so there was no time for any rebound. But, yeah, we were fortunate.
Newman for three. Hello, Newman! 81-78, Kansas by three.
3 weeks is a good kind of benchmark to reevaluate and reassess kind of where I'm at, my progress or whatnot.
I'm just assuming he's not going to play in the first round. And we'll reevaluate after 4 weeks. Maybe five, and then maybe he'll play, but who the hell knows?
What I learned from my injury was that I'm unstoppable, man.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Monday, I guess. Waterlogged, though it may be. Technical difficulties, though they may be. Snow at Martinsville, though it may have come and gone. NASCAR wrapping up its first snowed-out race since 93 in Clint Bowyer. Picking up the victory. So there you go. And if you haven't seen the end of it yet, sorry. Opening montage, Vladimir Tarasenko with a pair of goals over the weekend, and the Blues with a pair of goals over the weekend. Costly on Friday, however. We'll get to that in just a second. Sister Jean Dolores Schmidt. They're now using her full name. Not just Sister Jean, but Sister Jean Dolores Schmidt from Loyola Chicago. As Loyola Chicago, as you heard on Westwood One this weekend, advances into the Final Four NCAA Radio Network. Again, Westwood One, Michigan rolls 58-54 over Florida State. And Villanova, a one seed. DiVincenzo has himself a good game. And Westwood One with the call on that one as Villanova moves on. That awkward moment when, no matter how much you hate Grayson Allen, you are actually kind of rooting for Grayson Allen because you hate that community college to our west even more. But Grayson Allen, and it's all his fault, misses the shot. You go to overtime, and KU picks up the overtime victory to move on to the Final Four. Bill Self and Grayson Allen on that missed shot in regulation. And it did do everything except fall down. But as they say in the biz, ball don't lie. And when Grayson Allen put that thing up, ball didn't lie. The ball did not like him. Malik Newman, man, he had himself an overtime, 13 points. Westwood won with the coverage. Steph Curry, Steve Kerr on Curry not playing in the opening round of the NBA playoffs. And Jason Pierre-Paul was a Giant, now is a Buccaneer. And because he's missing a finger and a thumb, he fits right in with the Buccaneers. But he said it makes him stronger. So welcome in here Monday on the Closers. 442-8255 is the phone number, 442-8255. Jay's off a couple of days here as he is, I'm sure, enjoying the wet weather camping. Bully for him. So he's enjoying a little bit of spring break before everything gets back up and rolling again. Larry Borowski is going to join us here in this hour, about 420 or thereabouts. We're going to talk St. Louis Cardinal baseball today. As they have a game today, a game tomorrow, both against Toronto Blue Jays, and then they will open up the season on the road in New York against the Metropolitans. And we will talk injuries, because injuries over the weekend have taken out two pitchers, and they are going to start the season not on the mound or in the bullpen, but they will start the season in or on the DL, on the shelf, both with hamstring issues. So we'll talk about that with Larry Borowski at 420. We'll also talk about the kind of the direction of this Cardinal club. Are there markers, are there benchmarks for this team as they go along during the course of this season where you look at it and you go, all right, after 60 games, where are you at? After 90 games, where are you at? We're at the, you know, that halfway point of the season. Where are you at going into the All-Star break? What, you know, trade deadline, where are you? So we'll talk with Larry about those and then some potential already items that you could dangle in front of people so that they could become, you know, maybe interested in all of your extra Tupperware lids. We'll talk with Larry about that one. Also, hour number two, the South End Zone expansion is in its deconstruction phase before it begins the construction phase. And that's going to affect an awful lot of things, not the least of which is the spring game. That will be good practice for you season ticket holders and people who want to go to the game. But we'll talk with Missouri Athletic Department Representative Nick Jost in the 5 o'clock hour about all a lot of stuff, football, a lot of ticket things going on, and going from there. And we'll also visit at 5 o'clock hour your going home forecast with Kenton Jewicki from the live Doppler 8 First Alert Weather Center. 442-8255. Good afternoon. You're on the Closers.
Hi.
Hello.
I wasn't sure I called the right number.
Well, I have no idea until you get to the question.
That's exactly right. Is Ranger Rick and the Pony still a program on KOPN or not?
I have no idea, but you called KFRU.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then how would you know?
I probably wouldn't. Nope. Sorry about that. Yep. 442-8255 is the phone number. Even stuff we don't know the answer to. But, yeah, Clint Boyer picking up the win in Martinsville as that race just wrapping up on our sister station, KLIK. That was rather interesting. They had about 4.5 inches of snow Saturday night. They got 23 laps of the truck race in, then had to postpone the truck race, and they followed both races today. You got a doubleheader today at Martinsville. 11 or at 10 o'clock was the truck race, and then that was followed by a noon or a 1 o'clock start for the STP 500 down there at the racetrack they call the Paperclip. 1993 at Atlanta was the last time a snow postponed a NASCAR race, but today it was Clint Boyer's show, and he picked up the victory as he closed it out at the very end of that race. So NASCAR done for the day, and God, you wonder what the wind chill was like. I mean, it was in the 40s, right? But you're driving, what, 110, 120 miles an hour, thereabouts, give or take a few. So you cut wind chill. So the boys from NASCAR battling it out at Martinsville today. And there you go. So you got that one going on. We're going to talk a lot of baseball as we get moving through the course of this week. We missed this on Friday and apologize for that one. But Jefferson City Public Schools announcing the new mascot for the Capital City High School. And that mascot will be the Cavaliers. And powder blue will be part of the colors. So that will be one of those brand new schools that gets to be integrated in. It'll be interesting to see how that fits in. For those of you who are familiar with the battle integration, that first year when you're a school, you're kind of assigned a random group of scheduling, and you're not permitted into the postseason. That becomes on year number two. So Jefferson City Public Schools, that second high school, will be called the Capital City High School Cavaliers. So that should be an interesting scheduling event down there, depending on the class. I know we've seen that in Columbia with Battle, Hickman, and Rockbridge. So now what happens down in Jefferson City when you've got Helias, Jefferson City High School, and now Capital City High School? How does that intertwine, and do they end up having kind of a Capital City battle in the Capital City for bragging rights for the course of the year for both football and for basketball? We're going to also talk some NCAA Final Four action. I had to go get a brand new pink highlighter over the weekend because my bracket has, again, taken a beat. My champion is still alive. Villanova is still alive. I was in that awkward position of, as much as I disliked Grayson Allen, I hated Kansas more. So I was conflicted rooting for Grayson Allen to actually become the hero and get the game-winning bucket. And he was unable to complete said task. Instead, the Chicken Hawks move on. So they are part of your Final Four. So you've got now Loyola Chicago, the 11th seed. No 11th seed has moved into the championship game. Loyola Chicago is the fourth 11th seed to grab a Final Four appearance. The last one was VCU, and Shaka Smart parlayed that into a head coaching job down at Texas. And he's now having to deal with all the slings and arrows out of that one. But that was the last Final Four team that was an 11 seed to get to the Final Four. And also, they will face number 3 Michigan as Michigan solved Florida State. So your Final Four is set for the men, and that will take place on Saturday and Monday right here on KFRU. You get the doubleheader on Saturday, and then you get the national championship game 1 week from today here on KFRU and KLIK, courtesy of Westwood One. And then the ladies will finish things up tonight. And that has a particular interest, or should have a particular interest, to Missouri Tiger women's basketball fans. But we got some baseball to address, some DL issues to talk about, and we'll try to not hamstring you, nor approach this obliquely.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1240.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Closers here alongside a vacant chair. Jay Sparks has a couple of days off for spring break. I'm sure he's enjoying the rain because, well, he's camping. I had my mimosa weekend. He's got his camping weekend, and I hope he brought a lifeguard. Larry Borowski joins us now talking St. Louis Cardinal baseball as the Cards have 2 more spring training games, Larry, and then they open up the season on the road in New York. And, man, the news already hitting for the Cardinals on the pitching staff, both the starter, Adam Wainwright, and their closer, Luke Gregerson, out on the DL with hamstrings. It's not so much surprising, I don't think, for Gregerson, right, Larry? Because, I mean, you missed most of the season with an oblique injury. They tried to load him up with some innings over the weekend, and then the rest of the body kind of gave out on him. But who comes back first, and who comes back in better shape, Wainwright or Gregerson?
From what I read, Wainwright's injury was less severe. And so, you know, they're talking about that maybe he's only going to miss a couple of starts, you know, that he'd be on the DL for the minimum 10 days. Mm-hmm. With Gregerson, they're being a little more cautious. You know, it's always unpredictable, and we're talking about a couple of guys on the downside of 30. And so, you know, we'll just have to see. I mean, you know, Wainwright always has been reasonably quick to rebound from injuries, you know, perhaps to a fault in one or two instances. But, you know, I think I would put my money on him reappearing first.
Well, and then the Cardinals made the move to get Gregerson in the offseason to become their closer. Now it is Matheny saying yesterday that it is going to be closer by committee. And it's a lot like on college football. If you've got two quarterbacks named as your starter, you don't have a college football quarterback.
Yeah,
are we looking at the same thing here right now, that the Cardinals could be missing a lot of opportunities to close out games that could be wins, and in the fall looking back on it going, dang it?
Well, you know, that danger is multiplied. Whatever the danger is, it's multiplied when Mike Matheny is your manager. You know, I think that's the thing that's got to make everybody nervous, which is that, you know, running a bullpen and pushing the right buttons in a bullpen has never been, you know, considered Mike Matheny's best skill as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's always been most comfortable when he's got, you know, like one guy who always pitches the seventh no matter what, and one guy who pitches the eighth. So, you know, kind of giving him the flexibility to decide, well, what's the proper matchup for, you know, this particular situation and this particular hitter. I'm hoping that Mike Maddox is going to be advising, you know, and weighing in very heavily on those decisions. It can work. You know, that model can work. We've seen it work in St. Louis before. It's just, you know, whether it can work for this management team. It's certainly something that I have to see before I believe that it's going to be effective.
What do we know about Alex Reyes? I mean, he didn't pitch any innings in spring training, coming back off of Tommy John surgery, and they intentionally didn't have him throw. So we have no idea who or what he is going to be when he steps on that mound for the very first time. What do you expect out of him?
I have pretty reasonably high expectations, simply because he's going to be, you know, almost 2 full years removed from that surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, that's, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. He had the surgery in like March 1st of 2017. So by the time he hits a mound, it's going to be a big league mound. It's probably going to be, you know, mid-May. So he's going to be about 15 months post-surgery. And, you know, that's a pretty good distance away from that surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think his velocity should be back. They're giving him plenty of opportunity to get his mechanics and his command back. And the track record is good. You know, lots of guys have gone through this surgery by now. It's almost a routine kind of thing. And, you know, guys come back throwing as hard as they were before in most cases. And so, you know, I think the real question is going to be, you know, Alex Reyes is a guy who always struggled with throwing strikes and you know, having command, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even all the way through the minor leagues, you know, he actually seemed to improve his command once he hit the big leagues, you know, for a period of time at the end of 2016. But having then, you know, spent an entire year on the shelf, will he be able to throw strikes consistently? That's my number one concern, more so than, I think, than his health.
Okay. And then Matt Carpenter was an interesting case study last year, because we talked a lot about his ineffectiveness, where the year before he had been really, really effective as a lead, not just a leadoff guy, but a guy able to get on and, as they say in baseball, get him on, get him over, get him in. He fit all three of those roles. Last year he said he swung for too much power. What Matt Carpenter shows up this year then? Because they really do need that get him on, get him over, get him in kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, his health is really, you know, it's something that we should all be concerned about, too, even
mm-hmm.
though he's dispelled a lot of concerns by, you know, he didn't take a single at-bat for the first 3 weeks of spring training, and, you know, his back was sore, and, you know, he's had back issues, and he had his own oblique issues
mm-hmm.
Over the past two seasons, and he's 32 years old, and, you know, I was seriously concerned about what kind of shape he was going to be in when opening day arrived. But, you know, he did get back out there and actually started to swing the bat with authority right away. So, you know, that's not to say he's going to stay healthy all year. You know, he hasn't been able to do that for two straight years now. He's had, you know, compromised physical, you know, limitations that you know, affected his swing. Second half of 2016, he just wasn't the same hitter. But to the extent that he can stay healthy, he looks like he's very focused. He's going to bat third, and, you know, there's no statistical reason why he shouldn't be just as effective there as he has been in the leadoff role. But, you know, again, so far he's never really actually been very good when he's batted third. You know, we'll have to see. I think at the end of the day, as long as he's getting on base, you know, he's going to get his extra base hits. I don't really care what his batting average is, you know, as long as the on-base percentage is high. And last year, I think he hit .240 and his OBP was like .390. So, you know, that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he stays out there, you know, that's the thing. And you know, I really hope that they're not going to move him around the infield too much. You know, I don't think that, frankly, that helps things when he's at second base one day and third base another day and first base, you know, the other 3 days. It just doesn't, I think leaving him at first base as much as possible is what I'd like to see them do.
Matt Carpenter, Colton Wong, Tommy Pham, Dexter Fowler. Of those four, are you more concerned about offense or defense?
Well, Wong's defense doesn't concern me at all. The other three, and actually, you know, Tommy Pham is a strong defender, and he's, you know, displaced Fowler from
mm-hmm.
Center field. You know, we'll see how Fowler plays at a corner. You know, he'll have less ground to cover. I'm not sure if his arm is really conducive to playing right field. We'll have to find out if base runners exploit that. That was never.
Yeah, those are long throws, man.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
yeah.
If guys are going first to third on him, you know, with no hesitation, you know, that's something that's going to just have to be watched carefully. But, you know, out of those four guys, you know, really, Tommy Pham may be the guy who has the most question marks about mm-hmm. him from an offensive standpoint. You know, I think he's a better hitter than Wong is, but Wong's not really being asked to do a whole lot on offense. You know, he's going to bat eighth, and Tommy Pham's going to hit second, and they really need him to come close to what he did last year. And frankly, you know, asking him to repeat that year when it's been, I can't remember how many decades since the Cardinals had a guy with a 300 average, 400 on base, and 500 slugging, which is what Pham had last year. You know, they can't ask for him to repeat that. But you know, they do need him to have a high on base percentage. You know, they need him on base, you know, 360 or higher. They need him slugging 460 or higher. And he had a difficult spring. His vision may not have been quite right. He lost a contact lens at the outset of spring training, and he also did a minor change in his batting stance, moved his hands a little bit further away from his body toward the end of spring training. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, almost came out of the blue. I think a lot of people thought he had talent, but they didn't realize that he was capable of what he did last year. And, you know, I think a little bit of regression is probably inevitable. We just hope it's not too much.
Yeah. Larry Borowski with us here talking Cardinal baseball on the closers. Paul DeJong, they gave him a nice little contract prior to spring training. How much pressure is on him to succeed where Ledmys Diaz did not?
I would hate to think that there's some sort of a shortstop jinx on this franchise. But, you know, I think they feel like Paul DeJong is a different type of an individual from a Ledmys Diaz. You know, Diaz, I think they felt like, did not respond to coaching. He was slow to recognize when the league caught up to him and started to exploit his weaknesses, and he was slow to adjust. And I think they feel that DeJong is the opposite type of a character, you know, that he's someone who is mentally, attuned to how am I being attacked and how do I adjust to those attacks so that I'm not just going to become exploited. And I think he's also considered to be someone who will, submit to coaching constructively. If the video guys come to him and tell him, you know, you're late on this type of a pitch, or you're overcommitting to that type of a pitch, or your stride is, out of kilter, that he'll be able to do something with that information. So, regression is definitely a risk for him as well, because, you know, he had a high strikeout rate and still managed a .285 average last year, and that's because a lot of his batted balls, you know, eluded the fielders. I think his batting average on balls in play was like .385, which is ridiculously high. Through natural regression, that'll probably come down, and he's probably going to hit maybe closer to .260. But I think the Cardinals want him to do two things. They want him to field the position, which is another thing Diaz wasn't doing, and they want him to continue to hit the ball with authority. So, you know, they'll live with a little reduction in his batting average as long as he's, you know, still giving him extra base power.
The big offseason addition was Marcell Ozuna. We've had kind of a spring training to watch and at times admire the moonshot. Otherwise, it's been pretty quiet for Marcell. What about the regular season? What does he bring to this Cardinal team that they were missing before he arrived?
I think they hope he will bring a fear factor. He certainly put up the types of numbers last year, 37 homers, 120-plus RBIs, you know, slugged close to .600. And so, they want him to be the kind of a presence in the lineup that, you know, when he's, not even in the on-deck circle, but he's, you know, a batter or two away from the on-deck circle, that pitchers are already thinking about how do I get through this lineup in a way that I minimize what Ozuna can do to me. I think he's probably still, he's really hitting his prime. He's only had, like Tommy Pham, you know, he's only had the 1 year last year where he put up those kind of numbers. But, unlike Tommy Pham, I mean, he's 2 or 3 years younger than Pham, and, you know, he kind of had more of a natural development arc to build up to those numbers where, you know, you feel a little more confident saying, you know, Ozuna showed flashes of this kind of ability throughout his early 20s, and then he put it all together last year, and now he's kind of reached a new plateau that, you know, the Cardinals hope will be in place, and that, you know, he'll make the entire lineup more dangerous simply by, you know, providing, you know, an intimidation factor that really nobody in the lineup last year was able to, you know, to exert.
All right. The limiting factor for this Cardinals ball club success for 2018 will be manager Mike Matheny, the health of Matt Carpenter, or the health of the starting rotation slash bullpen?
I'm going to go with the manager. and you're, although I think,
boy, the bloom is off the rose for you with Matheny, isn't it?
Well, you know, and let me explain why I'm saying that.
Okay.
You know, we've had two straight years where the team underachieved, and you know, you could see that both by watching the team and watching the sloppy base running and the repeated mental mistakes and fundamental errors and bad bullpen usage. You know, all of which has something to do with the managing, either directly or indirectly. And then you can just look at it numerically. If you look at the ratios of runs scored to runs allowed, you know, and look at what is their predicted one-loss record based on those inputs, they should have made the playoffs each of the last 2 years. If you just look at their Pythagorean record, their runs scored versus their runs allowed would have predicted that they would have won 88 games both of those years, and they'd have been a wild card. And, you know, for reasons that are some combination of bad luck, bad managing, you know, the players themselves not coming through in the clutch, you know, all of those things contributed to the team being less than the sum of their parts. But, you know, I do think that Mike Matheny's managing has been a concern for years, and in the last couple of years, when you have 2 years like that in a row, you know, you start to think that's a problem that really has got to be solved for the team to move forward. And, you know, that's one reason why Jose Oquendo was brought back and why Mike Maddox was brought in. And so, you know, those two coaches may have an ability to, you know, perhaps redirect the leadership vibe in the clubhouse and maybe clean up some of the sloppiness that we all have complained about and you know, really been disappointed by.
Yeah.
But you know, the young pitching is really another, you know, they're counting a whole lot on pitchers who have ability but who don't have a track record. And if those bets pay off, you know, I think the team could be very well positioned.
All right, Pecota, projection for 2018. I'll get to that in a second. Their first line on the analysis, Cardinals won 83 games last year despite not being really good at anything. So their 2018 projection is 85. I'm going to give you 87.5. Is Larry Borowski taking over or under 87.5 wins for the 2018 Cardinals?
Well, I think that's the exact right number. And, you know, I have them at 87, so I guess that means I'm taking the under. But,
okay.
But you know, I mean, I think 87.5 is I think that's the hinge point, you know, right there. And you know, certainly I think they have all the pieces necessary to be a very good team. I think they have the pieces necessary to be a 93 to 95 win team, if things go right. But you know, I think that as we've seen the last few years, they haven't always lived up to what their ability level is. And, you know, when it happens 2 years in a row, I become skeptical and say, I need to see it before I really can trust in it.
Yeah, unlike the restaurant that always leaves you wanting more, this is not a good thing for a Major League Baseball team to leave you wanting more. So.
No.
All right, well, hopefully the third course is better.
Low, my hopes are high.
Okay. All right, well, I'll let you get busy back to hanging out the opening day bunting. Beware the breezes. Because it's not going to be real pleasant on Thursday, especially when they open up in New York.
All right. Well, you know, I'll maybe I'll just stretch them out overhead like tarps instead of letting them hang.
Okay. All right. Well, keep them away from the space heaters, though. We don't want your buntings to go up in flames.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, all right.
It's against the codes anyway.
Yes, it certainly is. Larry, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll get those immediate snap decisions and reactions to the first weekend of baseball.
All right. Thanks a lot, George. Hey,
you are very welcome. Larry Borowski, St. Louis Cardinal baseball game. He'll be with us every week during the Cardinals baseball season, just like David Leske will be with us from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City talking the Royals. We will be back, and we will talk a little bit more basketball, and we will do that right after this.
The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here alongside the empty chair that is normally occupied by Jay Sparks. I'm George Young. Happy to have you alongside for the ride here this afternoon. 442-8255. It's the phone number 442-8255. Men's basketball Final Four is set, and it makes for very short reading right now. It is Loyola of Chicago and Michigan, an 11 versus a 3 seed on one side of the bracket in San Antonio. The other side of the bracket is a pair of number ones, number one Villanova and number one Kansas. Yeah, the Beakers made it. But so this will ensure that one number one seed will play in the championship game. Will you get an 11 seed or will you get a 3 seed? Well, the odds are in favor of the 3 seed because no 11 seed has ever made the championship game. They've all lost in the national semifinals. LSU in 86, George Mason in 2006, and most recently 2011 VCU. So, yeah, it's been a minute since an 11 seed has made it this far. But the Ramblers, said it last night on Gervino's show, KOMU Sports Extra, and I said it again. The one thing I liked about, and I like about Loyola Chicago, other than the fact that they've got Sister Jean behind them, and I've learned, don't bet against the sister. Don't bet against the pastor, especially if they're at the game. But you see them playing the same way every game. And it doesn't take them very long just to kind of figure things out. And they're very patient. They're well, I mean, listen, this is a group of kids that have played 3 or 4 years together, got a couple of transfers in there from Blue Valley North High School, but still, these guys have weathered the challenge. A couple of last-second victories, and then in a game where you look at it and you go, you know, man, K-State, best defensive team left on that side of the – and they just mauled the Wildcats. I mean, that thing, that was not quite over immediately, but it was pretty close to being over very soon after tip-off as Loyola Chicago got out to a big lead, and then K-State had to fight the rest of the way, and they got it close. They got it to within single digits a couple of times, but, man, Loyola Chicago just pushed that right on out of there. Last-second win over Miami of Florida, a last-second win over Tennessee, the last-second win over Nevada, and then a roll-by over K-State. You got to have nothing but confidence right now if you're Loyola Chicago going up against number 3 Michigan. And you watch all the, if you watch the games over the weekend, that's one thing. If you listen to them, thank you. We appreciate that. But if you watch the games, the game over the weekend, Florida State and Michigan, the one thing that Florida State did was close out that 3-point line very, very quickly. Boom, out there. That 3-point shot was contested just about all night long, so it left Michigan to have to play inside. If you've watched these games with Loyola Chicago, the one thing that they have been able to do is close out on the 3-point shooters. You're not getting a lot of the other teams are not getting a lot of success from beyond the arc against them. Look at K-State. Look at what Miami did. Look, even Miami was a good 3-point shooting team and they didn't shoot very well. Same thing against Tennessee. Tennessee, good 3-point shooting team, didn't have a whole lot of success. Had to rely on a big inside game from them and they didn't really get it. Loyola Chicago, beat you inside, and they can beat you outside. I like this team, actually, to get to that championship game. So there you go, Sister Jean. I bought in. That and those Gryffindor scarves. Just spectacular. They have brought those back. Other side of the bracket, number one, Kansas, and number one, Villanova. Jay Wright, Bill Self. As far as the haberdashery victory, that one goes to Jay Wright. As far as the win on the court, I think that also goes to Villanova. Villanova's played a lot of different styles going through this tournament so far. They manhandled Radford, took apart Alabama, didn't have too much trouble at all with Press Virginia, and Texas Tech, they were in the building, and that was really about it. They kept it close, but that was about it. You know, Villanova was kind of the older brother who had long arms and, you know, just kind of put their hand on the forehead of Texas Tech, and Tech just flailed away all game long, but really didn't get any closer. So I think your national championship game, for what it's worth, I will grab the pink marker. Loyola Chicago, Villanova. Villanova wins it. Yes, I'm going against Sister Jean in that one, but I want to keep part of some semblance of that bracket intact. I still have a winner. So anyway, basketball tonight, it will be a couple of games to get you to the Final Four. Half the Final Four was settled out yesterday. Mississippi State beat UCLA. That was a really interesting game because UCLA was down big. They were down by 18 in that fourth quarter, and they got it to within 6 points on four different occasions. And Mississippi State ends up with a double-digit victory. They won by, I think it was 13 or 15, 13 points. Mississippi State won. So got it to six. Lead balloons back out. Get it to six, which tells you two things. One, it tells you about the mental fortitude of Mississippi State and Coach Vic Schaefer, but it also tells you how hard it is when you get that score in and under double digits. You have fought all game long to get it to single digits, and you take a breath, and boom, you're looking at a double-digit deficit again. You got to fight back. Louisville takes care of Oregon State. Really no issues there. The second game of the night tonight is Notre Dame and Oregon. Muffet McGraw and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. They continue to win. They continue to have depth issues, but they continue to win. Oregon will be an interesting challenge for them tonight because Oregon can run. And when you've got four starters or three starters and a transfer for Notre Dame that are on the bench with ACL injuries, I mean, you thought Missouri had depth issues for the guys when they hit that NCAA tournament. You're looking at a similar issue with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish coming off of another pair of games within 36 hours. So Notre Dame, Oregon is game number two tonight from Spokane. That is an 8 o'clock tip on ESPN. The leadoff of the evening tonight shall hold a particular concern for Missouri Tiger women's basketball fans because it is a team that has been labeled bad for women's basketball, UConn, against the team that we have come in Columbia, Missouri, to hate, to loathe, to despise, and to beat at home. South Carolina, defending national champion against UConn tonight. That is in the Albany region. That is the final. That was the first game tonight, 6 o'clock ESPN, with the coverage of that one. It is going to be Gino Auriemma against Dawn Staley. Gino Auriemma, should he win tonight, would be his 19th Final Four appearance. That breaks a tie with Pat Summitt. Both Gino and Pat have 18 Final Four appearances. Tara Vanderveer with 12. Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden with a dozen each on the men's side. But Gino Auriemma looking for his 19th Final Four appearance tonight. It is in Albany. And last week, or a couple weeks ago, Dawn had mentioned that, you know, she's not ducking UConn, comma, but, dot, dot, dot. This is not where she wanted to meet UConn. In a national semifinal game, or Elite Eight, rather. So UConn and South Carolina tip off tonight, 6 o'clock on ESPN. It is the number one seed against the number two seed. It is the team that has won four out of the last five titles against the team that won it last year by beating another member of the SEC, Mississippi State. Mississippi State is on the opposite side of that bracket. And listen, as far as the women's game is concerned, that could set up a huge, huge storyline for the championship game should Mississippi State advance by beating Louisville and UConn advance by beating South Carolina, and then whoever wins out of Notre Dame, Oregon. Because then you would have the team that last beat UConn playing them in the national championship game. Last year when Mississippi State beat UConn, they ended the Huskies' 111-game win streak. Now they've got a whole other win streak about, you know, the number of wins in championship games, but still, They ended the 111-game win streak for the UConn Huskies last year, did Mississippi State, Vic Schaefer and company. So one half the Final Four is set for the ladies, Mississippi State and Louisville. The other half will be settled out tonight. And your first game at 6 o'clock from the Albany region, Albany, New York, number one UConn, number two South Carolina. The second game, number one Notre Dame and number two Oregon. You could have all chalk as the Final Four in this year's NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, something that you don't typically get on the men's side of things. So that's a little bit of what's going on here tonight. Congratulations to the Blues. We'll talk about them a little bit more in the second hour. As yes, they picked up two wins. Yes, they are now the second wild card in the Western Conference. But, man, that could be a very costly victory Friday against the Vancouver Canucks. Nick Jost will join us here in hour number two as we get things kicked off. We're going to talk South End Zone expansion, parking, tickets, success of basketball, a whole bunch of things on the top on the docket for the Associate Athletic Director Nick Jost. That is in hour number two.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.